This is Ashley Hodge. I'm joined by Kendall Kaut, Ring Before Spring. And we got a Big 12 tournament preview. This is the time, Kendall. The regular season's over. Baylor put some good work in the regular season. Resume is actually pretty good. I was looking at it. You know, I was like, okay, they lose to Texas Tech. Any chance of getting a two seed's gone. Not so fast. I mean, if they win the Big 12 tournament, I think that's a pretty strong two seed resume. And it really may come down to Iowa State-Baylor if they play each other. And we know how much success Baylor's had against Iowa State and Kansas City. We can definitely just count that as a win. You know, if they do play each other, that may be the determining factor because their resumes look pretty similar. Obviously, Iowa State's had a much better success in conference, but they have a pretty paper-thin resume in non-conference, and Baylor's done some good work in the non-conference. So, interesting times. What's your take on are you feeling optimistic as you head into the Big 12 tournament?
Yeah, I think it might be crazy talk, but I'm feeling a lot better about this Big 12 tournament than I have at any time since at least 2021. And maybe even going back farther than that, because at least with 21, it was like, well, that KU lost, so they still come back from COVID. I feel good about this Big 12 tournament. I think the offense is in a good spot. I think the rotation can shorten itself. With the injuries KU has, I think Baylor's got a good chance to even play Cincinnati in that quarterfinals when everybody's freaking out about, oh, you got to beat KU, Iowa State, Houston to win the Big 12 title. Well, you know, Bill Self after the Houston game was like, you know, our five will compete with anybody, but sounds like Hunter Dickinson probably not going to play in the Big 12 tournament. Mike Vernon does his scoops, a big KU guy. He says he thinks Hunter Dickinson's out. With Kevin McCullough limping, I think he probably won't play as well. So I think Cincinnati is very likely to beat KU. And then Baylor, Cincinnati. You know, could there be a more attended game in Kansas City history than Baylor-Cincinnati? This is what we all dreamed of when realignment happened, the 8:30 p.m. Baylor-Cincinnati basketball game.
I mean, Cincinnati fans may be out in force. I don't know how many Baylor fans will be there. I hope it's KU. Yeah. I mean, I would, you know, the crowd aside, I'd much rather play KU without McCullough and Hunter Dickinson than play Cincinnati.
Oh, yeah, and I could see Self almost waving the white flag if it's day two. And he's got his guys. He might just be like, I'm not playing DeJuan Harris 40 minutes to try and beat Baylor. So then you get to Iowa State. I'm sure the staff will have all the clips ready of the years where Baylor had chances in the Big 12 tournament only to get run off the floor by Iowa State. And then you get a final rubber match with Houston, or I guess the second matchup with Houston, and Baylor can think, hey, a couple calls didn't go our way. Eve Missy drops the ball a couple times. I think there's a potential for a Big 12 championship Saturday. And Ashley, will you be there Saturday if Baylor-Houston is the Big 12 title?
I will be tempted. That will be very tempting. And probably knowing myself, I will not be able to resist temptation. I will probably come up for that game if that happens. We were going through before we started the pod, Kendall. You know, Baylor's had quite a bit of success in the Big 12 tournament over the years. I don't want to compile the record because it would be pretty depressing. You know, they since 2015, I've had a streak of going – 9 straight years, and that's been a pretty dismal set of years to go. You know, the 2020 team, the 2021 are your best teams, and you lose in 2021 to Oklahoma State in the quarterfinals or semis, maybe semis.
That was the semis, yeah.
Semis, and then you lose in our 2020 is canceled because of COVID, so you don't even get a chance there. It would have been awesome to see a Baylor Kansas final in that tournament, but. You know, I think, you know, they've had their struggles, and a lot of their struggles are because they play Kansas, Iowa State, and Kansas State. and those are home games for those teams. And, you know, not to be a conspiracy theorist, Kendall, I don't know if you have heard me posit this theory before, but it's good for business when Kansas State and Iowa State advance. And so, you know, you don't want to make it look suspicious. So it's okay. One of those teams loses, but you want two of them in the semis, right? I mean, that's good for Kansas City. So it just magically happens to be that way a lot. And obviously their fans are there. So that's a lift. That's always worth 3 to 5 points. And, you know, I'm kind of kidding. I'm not saying there's corruption going on, but it does feel like, you know, Baylor's, you know, gotten those teams a lot and usually loses to those teams.
They have. I think sometimes recently Baylor hasn't cared about the Big 12 tournament as much. 21 was get right with the defense. I think 22, it was like, who cares? We'll be a one seed. And then in 23, I think kind of the same mindset of, well, we won the national championship, losing early in the Big 12 tournament, so let's get the rest. I think now that mindset's flipped. It's, There are some losses Baylor doesn't want to have on its schedule, the one against K-State, losing your final game against Texas Tech. I think this team's going to come in the hungriest it's been in the Big 12 tournament since probably 2018, when the team just didn't have the dogs to compete. I think they're going to be ready to play, and I think they're going to advance to at least the semifinals. My hot take is I think Baylor-Houston meet on Saturday for the Big 12 championship.
I love it. I like this optimism. You know, I will say we're penciling in Iowa State as the team that Baylor plays, you know, if they can get by a Kansas, Cincinnati. We're assuming West Virginia is not going to have much in the tank. They haven't showed much fight down the stretch of the season. But if it is, let's say it's Cincinnati-Baylor, and Baylor does win that game. You know, Cincinnati will be playing their third game in 3 days, and so maybe Baylor's fresh legs prevails. I think you're showing some disrespect for Jerome Tang and Kansas State. I mean, that's a hungry team. They got to get to the finals to have any shot of making the NCAA tournament. And wouldn't that be an interesting storyline that, you know, Scott Drew beats Jerome Tang for the first time and keeps Kansas State out of the tournament in the process?
That would be pretty cool. I worry, though, for the Fighting Jerome Tangs that Texas is going to beat them. Yeah. So I don't see that unfolding, but maybe K-State can get it done. I mean, they just beat Iowa State pretty handily on senior day for the Wildcats, so they've got a shot, and I hope that K-State can do it because I'd like to see them in the tournament. I look at the teams making the field. I really have no idea how 17 and 14 Villanova is in on so many brackets, but Cincinnati and K-State aren't even first four out on most of them, but we'll kind of see how that unfolds. Obviously, there'll be a really good K-State crowd if they make it that far in the tournament, and so that K-State-Iowa State game will be a much more lively crowd, I can assure you, than the 8:30 Cincinnati Baylor crowd. We were both in 2014, Baylor played Texas in the semifinals. There had to have been like 1,200 people in that game. And so I think that it's going to rival that atmosphere if we get the Baylor-Cincinnati 8:30 quarterfinal.
I could see that. Okay, Oklahoma-TCU. Is that an instant NCAA tournament play-in game, or do you think both those teams are safely in the field?
I think both are in. I think OU is definitely in with a loss. I think if TCU loses, they might go to Dayton, but I still think TCU's resume is good enough with, you know, if they don't win that triple overtime game in Waco, I think they're probably not in the dance, though.
Now, and we're assuming Houston is going to get to the finals. I don't know. BYU is the one that I think could knock them out. I mean, that's a much easier bracket. They don't have to play any of the teams that are local until the finals. But BYU will bring some fans. And, you know, I know BYU is capable of beating Houston. They played them down to the wire in Provo. Houston's a little banged up. They didn't show that against Kansas, for sure. But I don't know how much they'll have left in the tank to win three games in a row. That might bode well for Baylor if Baylor can get them in the finals.
It would. BYU, obviously, between those games in Provo and Waco, saw the difference. That what's so scary about playing BYU, with how many threes Mark Pope's squad shoots, they could go 15 of 25 against you and you have no shot to win.
Right.
And that's, I think, the danger for Houston as well, is that the offense isn't always there. And no matter how good you are defensively, there are just games where guys make shots. And so, I mean, there's a reason Kelvin Sampson has made one Final Four and lost early in the tournament. I think it's that. And so, yeah, I agree with you. BYU is the most likely team, I think, to upset the other Cougars.
Yeah. It's fun times. All right, so let's talk about just the brackets and, you know, what where you think, you know, some of these conferences are going to, you know, fall out. All right, so two seed, first of all. You know, I was you know, just resigning to the fact that Baylor wasn't going to get a two seed. You look at bracket matrix, they're the 10th seed right now. They're ahead of Duke and Kansas and Kentucky and Illinois. You know, all those are capable of getting a two seed if they make runs in their conference tournaments. Arizona, you know, will probably get either a one or a two seed for sure. You would think North Carolina will be a one and a two. Tennessee. So if Baylor is going to sneak into that two line, they're probably going to have to get some help from, you know, Marquette, Creighton not winning their conference tournaments. You know, UConn's the favorite, obviously, to win the Big East tournament. And then they're going to have to beat Iowa State. It's possible that, you know, Baylor gets that last number two and gets matched up with Purdue, which would be kind of an interesting bracket to be in. I think of the brackets. I mean, obviously, if Tennessee ends up being a one seed, or North Carolina, whoever, whichever one of those, or Arizona, you probably would want that to be the one seed you get matched up with. But Purdue would probably be my second choice versus Connecticut. They're not going to match them up against Houston. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with all of those takes. I think for sure we know the three of the one seeds are locked up with Connecticut, Houston, Purdue. Don't care if they lose by 50, they're right. One seeds. I think we also know three other teams are locked into that either that final one seed or the two seed. That'd be North Carolina right now, probably the final number one seed. Tennessee, I think, as well is locked in. Arizona. And then Arizona, yep. As long as they don't lose that first game in the Pac-12 tournament, I think is solidly on the two line. And so then you're competing with how does the committee view Marquette with some of the injuries that Shaka's teams had earlier in the year, but how amazing I thought they looked in Maui when they played KU. I thought it was one of the most impressive performances of the season. You mentioned Creighton. You mentioned Duke. Will the head-to-head come into play if it's close on the resumes between Baylor and Duke?
Right.
I think that is a possibility. So Baylor, I think, probably needs to win the Big 12 tournament or play Houston very tight and get some help. But I think if Baylor wins the Big 12 tournament, I think it will be a two seed on Selection Sunday. I think if Baylor wins a game, it is assuredly a three seed. I think if you lose the first game, you start wondering if Baylor gets into the four seed. And then who knows if we're going to, you know, we talked before, are we going to Pittsburgh? Are we going to Salt Lake City? So you'd really like to win a game. Assure yourself that you're at least going somewhere that it's easy to get into an airport and you're not on one of the coasts.
Right. Yeah. And if they send Baylor out west, there could be some dicey situations out there because they're probably going to send, you know, most of those Mountain West teams, you know, to those West Coast locations. Obviously the Gonzagas and the Arizonas and, you know, there's not very many teams from the Pac-12 that are going to be making this tournament. I don't know if you've seen what's going on in the ACC and the Pac-12, but I think the ACC is probably a four-bid league. I mean, I think Virginia might sneak in there, but it looks like, you know, just Clemson, North Carolina, Duke, and Virginia from the ACC. And then in the Pac-12, you probably got Colorado sneaking in there and then Washington State and Arizona. I mean, that's all you're seeing, right?
I think so too, though ACC seems harder to get a bid thief. I think it's more likely that, I guess it's a good over under, would one more team get in than what we listed right now or one fewer? Because I think there's a good chance that Virginia doesn't make the tournament. I was looking at some odds and they're right on that cut line,
right,
for whether they get in or not. Same, I think Wake would have to win the ACC to get in.
Yep.
And then in the Pac-12, USC just handled Arizona pretty well and they've been playing a lot better basketball. So I think there's a chance. But that year, Oregon State made the Elite Eight after going on a run, or Georgetown a couple years back in the Big East. I think something kind of funky could happen in the Pac-12 where maybe a USC or Oregon wins it and you get a bit deep out there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, you look back at Baylor's non-conference schedule. Of course, you never know this until, you know, the season's is over. But it's a pretty strong schedule. You know, Florida is good. Auburn's good. Seton Hall looks like they're going to be in the tournament. They're probably on the, a little bit of the cusp, but they've done enough, I think, to make it in. Then you got Cornell could win the Ivy League tournament. We'll see. It's either Princeton them or Yale probably with the best odds to do it. And they're all kind of equal. They've all beat each other up. Who am I leaving out? Oh, Duke and Michigan State. Michigan State's an interesting team. It looks like they're going to be in there, but just by the skin
second
of their teeth.
Second team we're talking about actually between TCU and Michigan State, that the Baylor win is why I think they're in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, exactly. You look at TCU, Texas, these teams, Iowa State, you know, the non-conference work just leaves a lot to be desired. I don't think any of those teams beat anybody that's going to be in the field. They have some good losses. Texas has some good losses, and Nevada, you know, beat TCU, and Clemson beat TCU. They're both in the field, but those non-conference schedules are doing them no favors. And obviously the Big 12 being the number one conference is going to help them, but they don't want to be messing around and losing games, and certainly probably won't like the seeding that they get.
No. And you're correct, certainly, that TCU is in real danger. I think 323 is one metric I saw for non-conference strength of schedule. And I think it was Matt Norlander who brought up that the committee, when it often has that one or two bubble teams that disagree with Lenardi or the bracket matrix, recently they've punished the team that has the most abysmal non-conference schedule. I remember right. 5 or 6 years ago, SMU was easily in on almost every bracket, didn't make the tournament. Well, why? Because they thought the non-conference that Larry Brown had put together was pretty weak. So I think that's a possibility. And then breaking news, I'm seeing on Twitter from Gary Bedore, He says that Bill Self says on his radio show, Hunter Dickinson and Kevin McCullough will not play in the Big 12 tournament, but will play in the NCAA tournament. I'm not sure I believe the latter, but I believe Bill Self on the former that we will not see McCullough or Dickinson. So you got to think Baylor's going to be at least a 6-point favorite probably in its Thursday night game against Cincinnati or KU.
Yeah. I'd much rather play KU. Hopefully the Jayhawks can summon that one special performance and we can, you know, get the Jamari McDowell, Timberlake, the game of the season, and they can beat Cincinnati. But I wouldn't bet on it. I would definitely bet on Cincinnati given that news. So A&M's an interesting team. Their non-conference is actually pretty good. I mean, they've got, you know, some decent wins, Ohio State, SMU, Penn State, Iowa State, beat Iowa State, lost to Florida Atlantic, lost to Virginia, lost to Memphis, lost to Houston. They've played some good teams in the non-conference, challenged themselves. They're 18-13, 9-9 in the SEC, you know, had that 5-game losing streak in SEC play, including a wonderful loss to Vanderbilt and Arkansas. But, I think that's another team that maybe they actually got swept by Arkansas. Good grief. You know, that's a team that might be interesting come Selection Sunday. I mean, they're going to have to win some games in the SEC tournament. But if they win some games in the SEC tournament, if you're deciding between them and an SMU or a TCU, I could see the argument for A&M just based on their strength of schedule.
I agree with you. I mean, really impressive stuff from the Aggies in terms of the non-con. You mentioned what I really like is they didn't play too many sub-300 teams. I think just like 3 or 4.
Yeah.
And then they really – I think they went out of the way to schedule the non-con, so I really appreciate that. But as you mentioned, what's kind of in the debate on Twitter today about the Aggies that I've seen is the end of their resume is real rough with those quad 3 and quad 4 losses. And in looking at it right now, in quad 3, they have 3 quad 3 losses – or 4, excuse me. Don't want to discount the Aggies in any stretch. So – 4 of those losses, not good. Torvik right now, I think, has the best bubble predictor. He has them right at 50%.
Oh, okay.
As one of his first 4 out. I think Bracket Matrix has the Aggies a little bit lower than that. But I do think that's a team that could really generate some controversy in the room. Well, my hope is it does, and the committee just says, screw it, let's put in Indiana State.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, you know, they beat some good teams at home. They pounded Tennessee. They beat Kentucky. They beat Florida. But you're right. I mean, they just don't have a whole lot. Iowa State, that's their big one they're going to hang their hat on, because that's obviously a 2 or 3 seed. So they did, you know, beat them in the non-conference. You wouldn't want to be them on Selection Sunday. They're going to have to win a few games. I probably even make the semis or the finals to feel confident.
I think so too. I would agree with that. I don't think he gets in.
Okay, let's talk specifics on Baylor basketball. So I have a couple questions for you, and then we want to talk about the Scott Drew Louisville rumors as well. So, Baylor with Langston Love back, one of the things you mentioned earlier, I mean, they're healthy now, and not every team's healthy this time of year. There's other teams have suffered some injuries. You know, everybody's nicked up a little bit, but Baylor looks like they have, you know, unlike other years, you know, they're coming into the Big 12 tournament with good health. And I think it's critical for the NCAA tournament to win, you know, to play 3 games, if at all possible, in the Big 12 tournament. Because getting Langston more, you know, in rhythm, you know, getting him against good competition, I mean, yeah, you know, you might get a 14 seed that you're just going to overwhelm athletically, and you know, Langston has a good game, but that's not necessarily going to set you up for making a Sweet 16. But if you can win these, you know, get 2 wins and play the championship game against Houston or BYU or whoever it is, that I think that'll be huge for Langston, and just the chemistry of you know, integrating him back into the lineup and getting your rotations down. Would you agree with that statement?
Absolutely. I also think it'd be nice because they had Langston for a minute play power forward on Saturday. Get him some minutes playing that position, which he didn't play a lot. I think he would have played that a lot more down the stretch to give Jalen some breathers. So I think, yeah, integral that Baylor gets more than 1 game. Great point, Ashley, because you don't want to have 1 game and then it's like, well, what's going on with Langston? How does Jaden feel if he's on the bench for 6 or 7 straight minutes? It just messes with everything. Get 2 or 3 games. Get that opportunity to play Houston. See how you match up with what you think your best lineup is against what might be the best team in the country. You got to get to that position. So, yes, I think Baylor will be as motivated as it's been in a long time to win games in this tournament. I think it has a real shot to make it to Saturday and even pull off the upset against Houston.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk our freshmen. I mean, we've been hoping that they're going to take a big jump. Jacoby, I thought he played pretty well down the stretch. Eve's been a little bit hit or miss. I mean, he's had some good games. He's had some games where he's disappeared a little bit, especially on the glass. I'm hopeful that when the NCAA tournament starts, that the officiating may be a little tighter. And it has been in the past, and that's why you see teams that play this, you know, really ultra physical, foul you on every possession. Let's give the refs foul fatigue and you know, dare them to call every foul. Sometimes in the NCAA tournament, they do. And, you know, you see Houston and Iowa State type teams exit early because of that. I mean, I think that's important. You know, if we get a tighter whistle in the tournament, I think Jacoby and Eve can really excel and have more freedom to move, you know, like they will in the NBA. But here, all right, so here's my statement I'm going to make. Ray J. Dennis and Jalen Bridges have been terrific all year. Jalen had a great start to the Texas game, but those guys have to start faster. Ray J. just kind of fills the game out. He's been terrific in second halves. He's often been the closer, but you know, we've fallen behind more than once this year, as we've seen, and just got dug ourselves too big of a hole. And it's just hard against good competition to climb out of that and end up winning those games. So my wish for the Big 12 tournament is to see your seniors, your most experienced guys really set the tone from an energy, you know, competitive grit. You know, we're going to come out and we're going to assert our dominance in this game early. They did it against TCU. You know, there's been some moments where they really, you know, certainly have shown that. But, you know, we need to see that. I mean, would you agree with that critique? I mean, I'm trying to couch it in a positive way, but, you know, other than to say, man, wake up. You guys got to, you know, come out firing on all cylinders from the get-go, or you're going to go home early in March.
Yeah, you're going to play better teams than Texas in your second game of the tournament. You can't get down 14 points
right
against teams better than Texas and expect to win very often.
And you're going to probably Texas Tech, too. I mean, that Texas Tech team, they're at home, but you're going to play better teams than them in the tournament, hopefully.
So yeah, you gotta start faster, and you can't have these. Baylor's had some good 10-0 runs themselves, the kill shots, as Evan Miyakawa calls them, but giving up way too many, and there's got to be something Baylor can do. I mean, I had somebody frame it to me as Baylor really just needs to play like 8 minutes of good defense with right. how good the offense is to win. But they can't play a 12-minute stretch of just, oh my God, where is the offense and why is the defense this bad? And what's happening against Texas and KU? I'm kind of glad Baylor lost to Tech because I think Baylor needed to learn, hey, you can't just get down 10, 12 points every game and expect to come back. There is a penalty even if it's against a team like Tech. And if you do this against Houston, where you didn't quite come back and win, this is what can happen to you. So please, please stop getting down by 12 or 14 points.
Yeah, no, I know. It's been a trend that's disturbing. And, you know, I think I heard the same statement made about Kentucky that, you know, they're so good offensively that you just need them to string together 8 minutes of good defense. And I think that's a true statement with Baylor. They've been so tremendous offensively through the years. And another year where they're, you know, top five in offensive efficiency, it's like, you know, death, taxes, and Baylor being top 20 in the nation in offensive efficiency. It's almost like you can just count on it every year. Scott Drew has been incredible. John Jacobs is incredible in that area. You know, but the defense has been a little bit more hit or miss. King McClure said it in the post-game call-in show with me. He said, you know, last year I feel like those guys didn't want to play defense. He goes, this year I feel like they want to. They're just not very good at it. But, you know, and hopefully they find some magic. And, you know, and I think, you know, the effort has to be questioned a little bit. You know, and I mean, you certainly could get better. I think Texas Tech's gotten better as the season has gone along. And, you know, they played a, you know, pretty good defensive effort. Certainly killed us on the glass. But, you know, rebounding, we've been great. Up until this Texas Tech game, we've strung together some really good rebounding efforts, but we took a step back against Tech.
Definitely did. And, you know, it'll be an off-season question for Baylor, but I would almost gamble more on, we think this guy is a better defender than he is offensive player, and the Baylor staff will teach you to play offense. I think that's an off-season topic to have, but the defense certainly has to get better for Baylor. I know that's always the theme on the message boards about, you know, what's the problem defensively? I think there are a lot of things Baylor will explore this offseason, but I certainly think the defense has not been up to par the last two seasons. And I listened to that call-in show. I thought King did a great job with you, Ashley. I listened to it afterwards when I got done with my game responsibilities. And I agree with him. I thought last year, other than Keontae, who was just not good at defense, I thought he really cared. I didn't think there was a lot of effort on that end of the floor, especially not from your fifth-year senior center. And so I think there is a lot more effort this season on the defensive end. But I agree with him completely that just there's not a lot of defensive talent on the roster 1-5 other than Eve Misi. I don't think there's a elite defender on the roster. I think there are two good defenders in Jalen and Jaden. And then I think it really, really gets downhill fast defensively from there.
Yeah, I agree with that statement. You know, it's interesting because I've been arguing for the Royce O'Neal, Ish Wainwright type of players in the portal. And, you know, Baylor had a chance to get Darion Williams from Nevada transfer, who's at Texas Tech. And, you know, Texas Tech ends up with him. But that's the type of player I think you need. You know, I think if you can get a 6'6 guy that's got a long wingspan and, you know, probably is going to stay a couple years because he's maybe a tweener in the eyes of the NBA, but a guy that's going to rebound, has a motor, can hit shots, you know, can score around the rim. I mean, you know, what Royce and Ish could do for us, I think that's the perfect portal guy to mix, you know, with good offensive talent. You know, so hopefully – That's my wish is we can get two of those guys. You know, one would a 6'9 guy would be great, but you know, if you can get a 6'6 guy that's you know, got some of those characteristics, I think you can, you know, put him around the VJ Edgecombs and the Langston Loves and, you know, the Josh Ojewunas and you know, the Rob Wrights and Jason Asamoah. And I think you could, you know, have a really good team if you can get two guys like that.
I think so too. I also think it leads to, when you look at the championship era team, did Maceo Teague's strength of somebody who could guard all four positions well and even guard centers at times kind of mask that it's difficult to play three guards like Baylor has so much the last two seasons and build an elite defense? I know some Baylor's even gone to Jalen at the three, Caleb at the four. Obviously, limitations with Caleb offensively that kind of limit that lineup's effectiveness. But there's an interesting counterfactual where if Baylor does, you know, land one more transfer. I know they were active in the guy that ended up at Michigan. And Jalen's a three this season. Does Baylor have a lot better defense with more length? And I think that kind of doomed 2013 Baylor, where they had to play the three guards so often, they just didn't really have that length to contest some people on the perimeter that you might have liked. And they had to play, you know, Brady and Pierre and Gary Franklin quite a bit together and Deuce quite a bit with those three. So I think that's something that maybe Baylor will explore this offseason. I know there are a lot of things you got to think about constantly in the offseason. Alabama loses Nick Saban. I remember his article, or the article Chris Lowe did for ESPN. They quoted Nick Saban, and he was like, you know, I came back from our bowl game, and it was just different this offseason, where the two questions I got asked by 80% of our players were, how much playing time do you have for me next year, and how are you going to get me more money? And he just said, you know, I'm not saying that's wrong, but he was just kind of tired of doing that.
Right.
And that really is life in college basketball now, where you got to get NIL money for everybody, and then everybody wants to play a certain amount of minutes, which is why, you know, KU is down right now. Kentucky hasn't really hit the loftiness that they've hit in the past. I know they're the darlings of some people, but I'm here to tell you right now that team is basically last year's Baylor team. That's not a national championship team, and it's very hard to do year in and year out. And so I think one of the debates Baylor will have this offseason is it okay if you take a step back for a year and say, you know what, we might be a 7, 6, 7, 8 seed this year, but then the next year we think we can be the number one overall seed,
right?
Because the guys we'd have coming back would be a lot more experienced, as opposed to, do you want to be a 3 or a 4 seed for 3 or 4 seasons? And I'm not saying what the definitive right answer to that, different days, you convince me of one or the other. But I think the real enjoyable thing about maybe being the coach at Baylor, being at Baylor as a program, is this is a place where if you're a 6, 7, or 8 seed for a year, you might have some people make fun of you or our dumbest posters on the board. There aren't very many. We've got a great board, but our dumbest posters might say dumb stuff. But ultimately, I think it's a special place in that respect where people aren't going to freak out if you're an 8 seed for one season, especially if the next year or two you can continue to be a 1 seed. And I think that's something that Baylor's got to decide and say, you know, would it just kill you and eat you up inside, though, if you were an 8 seed for 1 year after what you've had? I don't know what the answer is to that. I don't know if it's better to just be a 3 seed every year or if it's trying to, you know, hit the bullseye too precisely to gamble to be a 1 seed. But those are the difficult questions I think every program has to ask right now. And it's just very tough if you don't, I think, have some continuity like Houston's had, like Connecticut's had, like Purdue's had.
Yeah, that's a great point. And one we discussed at lunch recently, you know, when you look at the roster next year, do you roll the dice with like a Miro Little, Rob Wright, Jaden Nunn, Langston Love, VJ Edgecombe? That's a terrific backcourt. You know, you feel good about all five of those guys, but do you feel great about any one of those guys leading you to a Big 12 championship as a point guard? Probably not. I mean, you're taking a risk that, you know, a Rob Wright or a Miro Little are going to turn into Damon Lipsey, you know, and really, you know, show some great things if given the keys, you know, to the reins, or even a Jaden Nunn, you know, maybe he, you know, turns into that. But you know, the other way, you know, is you go get another Ray J. Dennis or James Akinjo, a guy that's proven, that's going to run the show and be your, you know, reliable guy. But then you probably lose Miro a little. I mean, you lose some guys, you know, that I'm not saying necessarily Miro, but you're probably going to lose somebody that's just not going to have the playing time if you do that. So those are tough decisions for the coach. And you know, you're going to have to bring in a lot of, experience and toughness on the front court. Cause you know, on paper, you get Josh back. Who knows what Caleb will do? We don't think we're going to get Bridges back. You know, we think he's going to go pro. So, you know, I think that you're going to get some experienced guys in the front court. You know, Jason Azimoto will be a nice piece there, but you're not going to rely too heavily on a freshman, I wouldn't think, in the front court. So, I mean, these are tough decisions. It'll be interesting to watch in the offseason, but I guess it doesn't matter because Scott Drew is going to Louisville, right?
Yeah, that's a good segue for us to go to that one. And so here's why I feel very confident he's not going to Louisville, and I'll break down kind of everything for me. First, I think is you look at who's saying Drew might go to Louisville, and there are really only two kind of national people that have mentioned this. One is Mike Rutherford, who writes a blog called Card Chronicle. That's the SB Nation Louisville blog.
Right.
He's obviously got good sourcing at Louisville, but he didn't say Drew's coming. He said he thinks Louisville's going to make the full court press for Drew. And then Aaron Torres of like Fox Sports or wherever he's from was like, if you were to move now, wouldn't it make sense? Well, what's that tell you? It tells you neither one has a single source close to Scott Drew that understands his thinking. Here's what I can say about where Baylor is in a good spot on this right now. Number one, the NIL budget for Baylor is quite high. We're never going to give out the exact numbers for that because no one wants that to happen. And any program that you do that for would cut you off instantly. But Baylor has a good NIL budget, and it continues to increase each year. Second, new arena. That's meant a lot to Scott, as we can both attest. And
it's big time.
I can certainly attest.
Yeah, you
can
go. You can go undefeated every year there. We should have gone undefeated this year, and we should, you know, expect to go undefeated every year going forward. It's big time. The atmosphere is unbelievable.
Yep.
I know the TV angle didn't do it justice, did it, Kendall? When you saw it in person, it was better.
It was unbelievably different. And so I got why everybody on the boards who goes to all the home games was like, what are you all complaining about?
Right.
This place rocks. And then like Hambone and I were like, we can't see anything.
Right.
What is going on? So, you know, I'm confident that I'll get fixed in the off season. But on top of that, he has a new house coming in Waco. His daughter goes to Baylor. He has influence on kind of everything at Baylor, what he wants to do scheduling wise, recruiting philosophy, everything else. He might think, you know, Louisville could give me everything I want there. But here's why I also don't think this is happening. Two more reasons. One, or I guess maybe three or four more. Louisville ain't Kentucky or KU. If KU or Kentucky opened up, I might have some concern there. But Chris Mack and Kenny Payne both failed there. I know Scott's a big competitor. So, you know, there's the part that could be like, well, will he think I can win there because it's a great job? I can do it all. But he also recognizes this is not Kentucky or KU. And I had someone who certainly told me that I trust that Scott is not taking that job. And then I think if you don't believe me in what I say on that front, there are two other things to look at. There are two national guys that really break coaching searches that are also connected in some way to the Baylor program. The first is Trilly Donovan, who we know is not always accurate with everything. But he's been pretty accurate other than the Jason Asimota thing with smoke around Baylor at times. Notice Trilly Donovan had said nothing about Scott Drew to Louisville at any time. And he's the guy who even gets a little, sometimes maybe ahead of his skis and reporting coaching news. And he's had nothing about it. And the second one, the one that I'd really rely upon, if you don't want to trust me on this, and if you don't want to trust Ashley on this either, is Jeff Goodman. Jeff, I think, is, if you look nationally, probably Scott Drew's closest media person nationally, I would say. I don't know if you'd say like Norlander or if you'd say somebody else, but I think Jeff is probably who Scott seems to be the closest with nationally. On March 6th, in the Field of 68's premium newsletter, Jeff Goodman wrote, it is also unlikely that Baylor Scott Drew leaves Waco for Louisville, per sources. Well, Jeff Goodman is also well-sourced in the Baylor program. He covered Baylor in depth during the championship run. I would think he's going to be very accurate there. He wrote a long feature on Baylor during that season. He's well plugged in. If Goodman's telling you this, if I'm telling you this, Ashley, if you're about to tell us this in a second, I feel very confident in saying Scott Drew will not be the next coach at Louisville. Maybe Louisville's about to offer a 10-year, $200 million contract. I don't think that's happening. I just don't see it at all, especially with some of the reports coming out that Louisville can't even afford the buyout of Nick Cronin. I don't see them breaking the bank to make Scott Drew say, you know what, I'll coach women's basketball at Louisville for the kind of money you're paying.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I definitely agree with everything you said. I will say, you probably don't know this, but Trilly Donovan did put something on his Discord that was like a little bit like, oh, there's maybe some legs to the Scott Drew stuff. But I feel like Trilly had incredible information early on. And now I do feel like he's been a little bit of a pawn, like, you know, some agents or, you know, people that have, you know, interest in stoking the flames a little bit might be using him to generate that. I could totally see a scenario where, you know, Scott's agent, you know, was trying to keep his name in the hat there to get something, you know, whether it's an expanded NIL budget at Baylor or something, you know, that this happens all the time. You know, coaches do that. Scott's always been first class, like, not let it be known. You know, Texas made a big run at him, before they decided on, he's so inconsequential to me. I'm drawing a blank on his name, Rodney Terry. they made a big run at him before they decided on Rodney Terry. I mean, that would never made the media. You know, it's like, it's, you know, there's stuff like that. You know, Scott just doesn't, you know, draw attention to himself. And, you know, so, I mean, but doesn't mean, you know, agents don't. And, you know, I think anything like that, you know, that's generating his name in the hat for the Louisville job or any other college job is for that purpose. I think Scott Drew, if he stays in the college game, is going to retire at Baylor. He's got everything he needs. Baylor's going to give him unbelievable support. He's a legend at Baylor, and I don't know, you can win national championships here. The home court advantage is now taken care of. That was a big thing, and, you know, a reason why he might have left in the past. But now we got Foster, and that has been that objection has been eliminated. So I think the number one thing is if the NBA comes calling, I think that might be tempting because, you know, you have a life. it's not, you know, right now it's like you're re-recruiting your roster, you're dealing with NIL, you got so many other irons in the fire in the college game that I could see the NBA being an attractive option if they ever come calling. But outside an NBA offer that makes sense to him, I do think he's going to stay at Baylor and retire a Baylor Bear.
Yeah, they'll name the arena eventually after Scott Drew at Baylor. You know, I don't know what the agreement is with the Fosters or with the Herds or with Bill Gates or what, but eventually his name will be on the arena or floor in some capacity if he stays at Baylor until his retirement. You know, he will not beat out the Yum brand and Kentucky Fried Chicken and Pepsi and all of that at Louisville. That is a program where you might be like, well, it's a good job because of the money. Well, you know, it'll be the Mountain Dew Code Red Arena in 10 years.
And knowing Scott, he does not care about that at all. Like, I think his number one thing is, can I compete? Can I win national championships here? He's already proven he can win one. So the question is, going forward, can I have the NIL budget to compete at the top of the sport? If the answer to that is yes, then I don't see any reason why he leaves Baylor. I think as long as the NIL money's there and he can compete and get the type of athletes that he knows will help him have a shot at a national championship, then I don't think he leaves.
No, and even I went through and looked beyond that, just from 10,000 feet. People don't leave college jobs they win national titles at for other college jobs. It is exclusively, as you mentioned, Larry Brown leaves for the NBA. So many other guys leave for the NBA, but nobody leaves. Billy Donovan, nobody leaves for another college job once they've won it someplace.
Not willingly, yeah. Patino obviously gets fired at Louisville, but I mean, yeah, but you're right. I mean, that is very rare. Unless you get fired at that school, you know, it's usually the history is that you don't leave. Jay Wright stays at Villanova. Mark Few stays at Gonzaga. I know Mark Few hasn't won a national title, but, you know, Tony Bennett, Virginia. I mean, you're right. I mean, it is once you, Tom Izzo, Michigan State, the history. Now we're in a new world with NIL. I admit that, But again, as long as Baylor can compete in that space, and I think they can, then I really feel confident. You know, what happened in the past, Indiana, Louisville, it has no bearing. It has no bearing. What matters is today, where the program is today, where the program can go forward, what the NIL budget is. Yeah, the fan base is going to be bigger at Louisville, but who cares? Like, you know, the Foster Pavilion is incredible. The atmosphere is unbelievable. And with more fans comes more pressure and more, you know, distractions. I mean, I think, you know, Scott's smart enough to realize that. So I don't think he's going anywhere. If he did take an NBA job though, who are your top five, candidates to take over the Baylor job?
I think they would all be
former Baylor coaching tree.
Yeah. I think they'd all be his coaching tree.
McCaslin, Jacobs, you know,
I think Brooks, Tang. Yeah. I think those four would get an interview.
Mills.
And then I think he would probably make a phone call to Kelvin Sampson just to see if he'd want to leave. He'd say no.
Yeah.
And that would be the extent of it. And one of those guys would get hired.
Yeah. Bryce Drew. Continue the Drew family coaching tree in Waco.
That would be hysterical. But yeah, I think there'd be a good chance it'd either be an internal staff promotion or Tang would come back.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I kind of see McCaslin maybe just because he played at Baylor. I mean, if all things are equal, you know, both are great coaches. You know, I McCaslin seems pretty entrenched in Lubbock. That may be a tougher pull than we think. But, you know, I do know that if you've played here, that probably holds a special place in your heart and kind of gives you, you know, maybe an extra pull, as we saw with Chris Beard and how important that was to him.
I think Jerome Tang would be driving to Waco that day telling everybody he could about having like $13 left in the bank, eating ribs with Scott for 10 hours to take the Baylor job if it ever opened up. And I don't think it will, as neither one of us do.
There's a lot of great options. Unlike the self-coaching tree, we were talking, somebody was mentioning this. I saw that on the message board, Geniuses, some Kansas State fan going on a rant, you know, after they lost. Did you see that?
Yes, about.
Oh, it's amazing.
They must be paying the refs because, yeah, like Norm Roberts and the rest of his coaches, Joe Dooley doesn't win whenever he leaves.
Yeah, the coaching tree's terrible. They, you know, they're 3-7 away from home. They're 15-1 at home. You know, it's like, you know, it was some pretty good arguments. And some that I actually was like, well, guy's got a point here. You know, we might need to check into this. But, yeah, we know. It's I'm not claiming corruption, but it definitely is a harder place to win, except if you're BYU, who's undefeated, never lost in Allen Fieldhouse.
Yeah, that's a good point. You can't fight that.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, you know, it's great as Baylor's program's been, you know, only one win there. You know, somebody was mentioning that, you know, would you bet, I heard this on a podcast, would you bet that in the next 30 games that BYU plays at Allen Fieldhouse, that they win a game or they lose the next 30? What side of the equation would you take? And you're like, well, yeah, I mean, Bill Self's not going to coach forever. And obviously, this is an interesting deal. Like, NIL is kind of maybe an equalizer, huh? Because all of a sudden, Kansas looks more than human, 10-8 in the Big 12 season this year. Did you know that Baylor's the only team to win 11-plus conference games in the last, like, 6 or 7 years? I saw the Baylor creative team tweet that out.
I saw the graphic and didn't read it because I was lazy on Twitter,
right?
Which probably tells you that, yeah, TikTok and phones have ruined me.
It's a little shade towards Kansas, which I love. I think it's amazing. All right. Well, we talked about a lot, and I love your prediction of a Baylor-Houston final. I would love nothing more than a Baylor-BYU final. Man, talk about the bars. I mean, the Power and Light District would be just loving that if we could see a Baylor BYU final. That would be, you know, tremendous business for the Kansas City locals there.
I'm confident the Baylor contingent will drink heavily for the 700 that will be there.
I think, you know, it's funny. I went to BYU and I was hosted by a client of mine, friend that's a BYU diehard, and he took me to all the great sites in Salt Lake City and BYU. And he was mentioning that he goes, look around the city of Provo. What do you not see? And I was like, no bars? He goes, yes, we have ice cream stores everywhere. There's bars. Like, and I looked around, like downtown, it's like ice cream store, ice cream store, ice cream store. It just made me laugh. You know, like they've traded their vices, you know, alcohol for sugar. I mean, that there are a ton of ice cream shops down there, which is amazing.
Yeah, that is different.
Something for you to look forward to if you ever go to Provo. Well,
yeah, you know, not for me. I'm a Cincinnati, I guess, Orlando guy.
And Ames. Don't forget about Ames. All right. Well, listen, this is great. Kendall, it's always a pleasure to do this with you. You've been listening to a Sikkim 365 Ring by Spring game. And, you know, you can't win 9 in a row until you win 1 in a row. Beat either Cincinnati, West Virginia, or Kansas. I bet it won't be West Virginia. But you never know. The great Raquan Battle may have something to say about that. Sikkim Bears.
Rule it out.